59077, the LaShawna Monique Hayward versus the State of Nevada. We have Ms. Hatcher representing the appellant, Ms. Christensen representing the respondent. As you can see, Justice Hayden is a member of this panel and is participating in oral arguments from Carson City by video conference. So she may have some questions as well during the course of the oral arguments. So, Ms. Hatcher, if you're ready, you may proceed on behalf of Ms. Hayward.
Your Justices, Ms. Christensen, I tend to be very brief in my argument, so I'll get straight to the point. The point that we were concerned about is that the court abuses discretion here repeatedly, on two occasions, denied Ms. Hayward's motion to sever. This should have been severed based upon the charges against Ms. Hayward because they were not substantial and they were injurious to the effect, because most of all they were injurious because this was a death penalty case. Death penalty was not sought against Ms. Hayward. Instead, it was sought against the co-defendant. And it's a heightened scrutiny whenever you go in with a death penalty case, because regardless of what people believe, when you're seeking a death, they think that you are automatically guilty. I mean, that's human nature. So that was a problem that we had with Ms. Hayward being evaluated along with Mr. Nelson. Now, this case is similar to the Duxworth case, where the court held that failure to sever was a revocable error. In that case, the defendants were friends, as was Mr. Nelson and Ms. Hayward. They drove from California together, just like Ms. Hayward and Mr. Nelson did. But one was more culpable of the other. In this case, if you want to say that Ms. Hayward was culpable, she was a lot less culpable than Mr. Nelson.
Ms. Hatcher, do you feel that by the failure of the court to sever these defendants, that it prevented Ms. Hayward from making prevented the jury from making a reliable judgment regarding her guilt or innocence?
That's true.
Tell us why.
That's because there was some evidence which came in which seemed to implicate both defendants, and whereas it was only related to Mr. Nelson. That is, that the car was driven to Mr. Hecker's home by Ms. Nelson. Ms. Hayward went inside the house. Ms. Hayward came outside of the house, and then Mr. Nelson went in. And we don't know what happened when Mr. Nelson went in, but we do know that when he came out, that Mr. Hecker was dead. And the case should have been severed because there was evidence presented as to Mr. Nelson that was not relevant to Ms. Hayward, and that's some evidence that was not relevant to her. Next, the case was such that the evidence was insufficient to convict Ms. Hayward. Granted, the decision of whether a person is guilty or not guilty is left up to the jury, but Ms. Hayward's case had been severed, this evidence would not have come in. Regarding the evidence against Ms. Hayward, we only had two things against her. That was the testimony of Ms. Frenchwood, who was an addict. She was a cocaine addict. She testified on the rec that she had used. She testified on cross that she had recently used as soon as the church was. And that was Sunday when she referred to the church. She referred to this Easter Sunday. The last time that she had used. Additionally, she stated that she was partially blind. And the letters which you've heard about. Those were the only two pieces of evidence which came in as to Ms. Hayward. And we submit that those evidence were not reliable and that they should not have come in. Those evidence that Ms. Hayward conspired to rob Mr. Hecker, that is resulting in his death. In order to have a conspiracy, the court in Moore versus State, which was a case which I tried, it stated that in order for a conspiracy to take place, there must be an agreement between two or more people. There was not such an agreement here. The fact that she may have known about what happened, she could have been aware of what's happening, she could have had some conduct, but that does not mean that there was an agreement between the parties. Based upon that, the evidence was insufficient to bind Ms. Haywood over. Unlike the Cable case, there's not a multitude of facts leading up to the charges against Ms. Haywood. There's no evidence of any type of an agreement. There wasn't even an agreement that he would go to the house with Ms. Haywood. Absent this agreement, the court cannot find that there was conspiracy. The letters were identified, they should not have been, because first of all, there was a gap in the change of custody. We don't know when they were written, how long they had been in the presence of the person who wrote them or who received them. There was no analysis of the letters to determine that Ms. Haywood wrote the letters. The only evidence that came in to indicate that Ms. Haywood wrote the letters was the jail identification number. That's the only thing that they had which indicated that Ms. Haywood could have written the letters. So proper foundation was not raised, and we talked about that in our agreement, saying that without proper foundation, that the admission of the letters was arbitrary, and it should have been to the discretion of the court that the letters not come in, but the court abused its discretion. As to the issue of burglary, which the state alleged that Ms. Haywood did not talk about, we stated in there that there was no evidence that eyewitnesses, fire, blood, forensics, or DNA evidence in the case proved to show that Ms. Haywood was involved in this case. Considering all the facts and the fact that the judge made arbitrary rulings, we submit that this court should grant the appeal and reverse the conviction.
And Ms. Asher, can I ask you a question? I know you've already sufficiency of the evidence on various counts. Can you talk about the kidnapping count, why you feel it was, if you feel there was insufficient evidence on that?
There may have been kidnapping, but it was done by Mr. Nelson, not by Ms. Haywood. Ms. Haywood had no idea what was going on in the house, and based upon that, so she didn't agree to take any of those items or to be involved in the kidnapping, in which case the victim was tied, hands were tied behind him, she should not be found guilty of kidnapping.
Okay. Thank you. Justice Douglas or Sadie, do you have any questions for Ms. Hatcher?
None for me.
I do not.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hatcher. You have about 7.5 minutes left for rebuttal. Okay. I don't like that. Ms. Christensen. Mm-hmm.
Again, I would ask that you start with the conspiracy count. I'd like to know how it is and how it is that the state supports this cause of action against Ms. Haywood and or what evidence was presented to show that there was, in fact, a necessary agreement.
Okay. In this case, there was a plethora of evidence regarding Ms. Haywood's involvement, and it began before the murder started, back at her residence on Kelsey Road.
Okay,
Ms. Haywood,
I want you to be very careful. I am not suggesting that she didn't have knowledge and that there may be some other theories upon which the state could proceed against her. My question has to do with her participation in the conspiracy and all of the charges that are derived therefrom.
I understand. I do have to explain some of the kind of the full picture in order to get to that. One of the things was her motive, and that was something that was presented, and that was something that came out from her testimony, or testimony from Tykeba Sterling, her sister, and Ms. Frenchwood about them being present together all at her house before. Tykeba Sterling was writing here that Ms. Haywood didn't have enough money to pay her for that, $100. She also didn't have enough money to pay her rent. She also didn't have any good crack. And it was known, it was told to Ms. Frenchwood by Ms. Haywood that there was a drought and there wasn't any good crack. because she was, in fact, a dealer of crack cocaine, but that Eddie, the victim, had crack cocaine. So she, Mr. Nelson, are present together at the house beforehand, and she comes down and says, Frenchwood, get in the car, we're going somewhere. She drives them, Ms. Hayward drives them, straight to Eddie Hecker's apartment at the Kensington Suites. And there was testimony that he sold drugs out of that apartment. And what they do is she drives through the parking lot, and she and Mr. Nelson point out Eddie's Mercedes in the parking lot. And then they drive across the street to the Popeye's Chicken, and Hayward and Nelson get out of the car and start talking. And they're talking for some time, and to the point where she sends Frenchwood into Popeye's to get something to drink. Ms. Frenchwood does that, gets something to drink, comes out, and they're still talking. And this is immediately after having pointed out Mr. Heckard's vehicle at the Kensington Suites, but not having tried to contact Mr. Heckard. Then she tells Ms. Frenchwood, who had previously been sitting in the back seat, get into the front seat and wait. And then they continue to talk outside of the vehicle while Ms. Frenchwood sat there and waited. Then Ms. Hayward got back into the driver's seat, Mr. Nelson got into the back seat, and Ms. Hayward drove them straight to Eddie Hecker's other house, which was on J Street. And she parks the vehicle outside and tells Jacqueline Frenchwood to get in the driver's seat while she goes in. She has told Jacqueline Frenchwood that Eddie Hecker won't let people in the house if he doesn't know them. So it was the state's theory that she was gaining access to the house at that point. And she goes in and comes back out and says he wouldn't give me any work, which there was testimony that was drugs. And at that point, Mr. Nelson asks for the socks and goes inside the house. At that point, Ms. Hayward then drives the vehicle with Frenchwood in it over to the parking lot across the street and faces the house. So she doesn't just sit there and wait like he's just going to go have some nice conversation. She goes and watches it from across the street. And she says to Ms. Frenchwood at that time, quote, fuck, 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 I didn't mean to get you into this. Indicating she knows that something is happening more than just a nice meeting between these two people. And they watch the house as Alonzo Woods drives up, Alonzo Woods goes inside, Alonzo Woods comes, and there's testimony from Alonzo Woods what happened inside. He gets robbed by Mr. Nelson at gunpoint, and Mr. Scott, who is LaShawna Hayward's uncle, and whose name is tattooed on LaShawna Hayward, and who has Ms. Hayward's name tattooed on him, so they're very close to one another, is inside the house, and he's got rope. He's the one that's walking around with the rope in his hands. You've read the testimony about Alonzo Woods making a split-second decision to save his life and diving out through the glass, hurting himself, somersaulting, and then going across the street. And it's at that time that Ms. Frenchwood and Alonzo Woods both see Mr. Nelson driving the car, Eddie Hecker's car. And they testified that, Ms. Frenchwood testified that all of a sudden, LaShawna Hayward, while Nelson is driving the car straight to them, Ms. Hayward is on the telephone saying, why are you in this car? At that point, she goes and picks up Nelson at a place a couple blocks away where he gets rid of the Mercedes. And the first question she asks when he gets in the car, taking his clothes off, is, baby, did you get anything? So that shows what the intent was and that she knew what she wanted to get. And it was very clear that she was the one who had the fruits of this endeavor afterwards. Because her own sister testified, beforehand she couldn't pay me $100 for my braiding. Afterwards, I saw her with stacks of cash and a large Ziploc bag full of crack cocaine. And all of a sudden she can pay me and she's paying her $1,500 in rent. So all of those, that planning that went into it, and the fact that she's the common denominator. She recruits two people, her boyfriend and her uncle, who she's very close to do this crime. While she is the person who gains access to the person who she knows has good crack cocaine during this route, and the person who she needs to get crack from. So that was the evidence of the conspiracy. Additionally,
she was the evidence was that Ms. Hayward was the instigator of this by recruiting other people to participate in this robbery.
That's what it appeared, is that, that she's the common denominator by the people who are involved in this. She's the one who had the motive to get the stuff, and she's the one who ends up with the fruits of the endeavor afterwards. showing that certainly she had involvement in this. Not only that, afterwards, what she did was clear as well, that she has never parked this custom-painted blue and orange Expedition in the garage, and then afterwards she parks it in the garage and then sends it to the shop to get painted black, and nobody ever sees it again. During that same time period is when Mr. Nelson is in the house checking all the doors and windows. It's clear that she was, the part of her role was she was going to get access and be the getaway driver. So that's how we proved the conspiracy and how we argued it in this case. Additionally were those letters. And
Counsel, I'm going with that conspiracy to me it plays into the secondary part and possibly the others as well. But an area of concern is the first degree kidnapping. It's a specific intent crime. Is there sufficient evidence?
Thank you. On that issue, many of the things that I stated were things that we argued regarding the first degree kidnapping. But I would point out also that her uncle is the person who is inside with the rope. And obviously she would be the common denominator to get him to that point. If this was really just a robbery, there was evidence that Takeba Sterling had seen Mr. Nelson in possession of that .45 caliber gun previously at the Kelsey Marie address, where he was present with Ms. Hayward, suggesting that she knew about that gun. If this was really only going to be a robbery, then it wouldn't need two people to carry it out. If there's a person with a gun who she's given access to go inside, that's all that's probably going to be necessary in order to effectuate the robbery. But she recruited two people, knowing that her boyfriend with a gun wasn't going to be enough. And then that's evidenced by the fact that Mr. Scott is the one who's walking around with a rope, according to Alonzo Woods, once he gets into the house. So that was the evidence that we had with regards to the first degree kidnapping. Everything regarding her motive, her involvement in the conspiracy, and all the planning that Ms. French was saw them doing beforehand, if that was all they were planning on doing, they wouldn't need that much time to plan. It's obvious that they're planning on something regarding Mr. Hecker. With regards to those letters, that's part of the sufficiency of the evidence claim as well, but I'd like to address it as for how Ms. Hatcher has argued it. I would note that the first time the letters came up in the trial was in Ms. Hatcher's opening statement, when she actually referenced the letters and named Nicholas Howard by name. Nicholas Howard was the author of that letter that in which Ms. Hayward says, he needed me to handle my business on my day, and things to that effect. And that was referenced as the Still Hood letter by Judge Herndon. The foundation for those letters was very clear in our argument, because we argued about it for quite some time. One of the main pieces of evidence that laid the foundation was within the letter itself, she listed out her mother's name, Pudgy, her mother's phone number, but then a P.O. box with a six-digit number and a Las Vegas, Nevada, an area code, in which she said, I need you to go handle something for me. I need you to make something happen with Alonzo, and there'll be something in the P.O. box for you when it's done. Well, Detective Hannah went and researched that P.O. box, got a search warrant for it. It was registered to Ms. Hayward, and there was mail from Ms. Hayward inside of that P.O. box. And so it's not only the jail identifiers that Ms. Hatcher talks about belonging to Mr. Howard and to Ms. Hayward that were able to lay the foundation for that letter. It's also from the actual content of those letters that were able to do that. Thank you.
You have additional time if you want to use it. Ms. Hatcher?
Thank you, Your Honor. There's no evidence of conspiracy here. There's no evidence that she did anything to conspire. The mere fact that she was talking with Mr. Nelson outside of the car, she sent Ms. Frenchwood inside while she was having a conversation. It should be noted that Mr. Nelson and Ms. Hayward had a personal, intimate relationship.
But wouldn't that be an issue for the jury? I mean, it could be the sufficiency of the evidence is something you certainly argued to the jury.
Right, yes, we did.
So our standard view is, could a reasonable jury conclude that there was sufficient evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to sustain a conviction for conspiracy? And from Ms. Christensen, it sounds like there's a lot of circumstantial evidence here that the jury could. So tell us why you don't think there is.
I don't think there is, because that in and of itself is just not enough. The fact that she went to the residence, she saw his car there, she parked across the street, she later went to the residence, she went in to determine what he would give her. He didn't give her anything. She returned to the vehicle, left in the vehicle. That does not show conspiracy.
What about this money she had in the drugs after?
We don't know where she got that money from. We don't know if she got that money when she came out of the house or if he had that money prior to that. Because Ms. Frenchwood, who was telling the court what happened, never stated that she saw any money anywhere. As to kidnapping, it's not intent. It has not been established that that was the intent of the parties, that Mr. Hecker would be kidnapped. The thing that's quite interesting that I think that throws a loop in this whole thing is that Mr. Nelson was driving Mr. Hecker's car, and Ms. Frenchwood stated, she said, why is he in his car? So if she had planned this, he would not have been in his car. Thank you.
Any questions? I was just to say that. Any more questions? Okay, thank you, Ms. Hatcher. Ms. Christian, thank you for your excellent arguments and briefs. And this case will stand submitted, and we will be in recess until 1:30.